I'm going to go. I'm going to talk. We're going to go live. Are we there, Bill Buepert? Hello.
We are there. Mission Control. Can you hear me? Testing, testing, testing.
Yes. Mission Control to Bill Buepert. This is Mr. Michael Dean. We had internet failure. I blame the government, if not directly, at least because they haven't allowed the free market to continue unabated and unmessed with and regulated in the world of telecom. So, Bill Buepert, we are going to talk about two things today. One is the Rwandan genocide, but that's going to be later. We're going to talk about the news right now. We're going to talk about the missile shooting down the plane. Go ahead, sir.
Okay, I wanted to correct you that we'll inevitably talk about more than two things, and we'll talk about both the Ukraine and the Rwandan genocide, but I'm certain that we'll riff off other stuff tangentially, as is our wont, as we do every show together. Okay, here's what's going on, apparently. And we have to know that with this shootdown of the Malaysian airliners, we rely in unclassified circles on all the information that's available to us via both the lamestream media and the alternative media that's on the internet. One has to ask oneself, when this happens, several questions. Number one, why would a commercial airline carrying commercial passengers pass through conflicted airspace, which is what Ukraine is? Why would they not pay attention to what the United States and the Western FAA puts out as warnings every day, which they call notice to airmen, on what places not to go over, especially something like this conflicted zone, in which there are SAM sites, surface-to-air missile sites, and airborne threats that will take out aircraft, and there is a historical pattern for that happening in the last 12 months.
To be clear, this plane was too high. This wasn't taken out with like a shoulder-mounted Stinger. That wouldn't have done this. This was like a platform, you know, a whole system with a big missile, you know, probably 20 feet long, guided missile launched probably from a tank with radar equipment that you'd need to know how to operate, right?
Yeah, it's very sophisticated, most likely like what NATO calls the Buck system, which is used by Russia and by extension, the Ukraine. You know, the biggest question in all of this, Michael, is who did what? And the biggest question libertarians usually ask is, cui bono, who benefits from this happening? And I think because of that peculiar power lens that you and I and the members of your audience who share our philosophy, we don't have factional, whether it's Republican, Democrat, or whatever country you may find yourself in, we don't have these kind of blinders on, because we know what this is all about is who's in power, who can take power away from the other, who can grab that power, and who can take that power, maintain it, and expand it. That's what this all comes down to.
Yep.
So what you ask yourself is, did the Ukrainians shoot them down, or did Russian-backed rebels in the Ukraine shoot them down? Because obviously it took place in Ukrainian airspace.
Is it possible that it was neither government and, you know, I mean, I guess they're saying rebels. Is it possible that it was like four guys that used to work at the depot that had access to the keys, kind of Mulan Labe style?
You know, of course that's a possibility, but I don't know.
And when I say Mulan Labe, I'm talking about, you know,
sure,
spoiler, but that's in the book Mulan Labe. There's something that gets taken from some sort of depot in Wyoming, but go on.
You know, you'd have to be a very sophisticated lone wolf operation or small band operation, or maybe a member of James Bond's, what was the name of that? It wasn't Spectre. It was a Smirsh.
A Smirsh.
Smirsh, something like that. That stuff takes place in fictional novels. But what it takes to support a sophisticated SAM system, as you pointed out, this is not shoulder fire.
And we're going to a break here. We'll be back. We can't hear it. I'm watching a clock. We'll be back.
When I found the Free State Project, I knew it was the key to achieving liberty in my lifetime. It's awesome to be surrounded by like-minded, freedom-loving activists who've moved here to New Hampshire. From politics to civil disobedience, we have it all. Where I came from, it felt that no matter what I did, liberty was dying. Perhaps you feel the same way? Call 888-377-2515 now to learn more about the Free State Project. That's 888-377-2515 or visit freestateproject.org.
The Central Scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN, or virtual private network, from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends, and we're not getting tricky today. I'm not singing, I'm not dancing, but we're maintaining because we are consummate radio professionals here. We're having a problem. I blame the government, although, like I said, they may not directly be pressing. You know, it could be Cass Sunstein pressing the gaslight Michael Dean button on his BlackBerry, or it could be, you know, it's probably a drop-down menu. It's probably like mess with Liberty radio people, and there's a drop-down. Let's see, Ian Freeman, Mark Edge, Michael Dean. But we're doing this without, we can't hear the music we can normally hear coming from GCN. There's an issue somewhere between us and them. I don't know where it is. But I'm just looking at a clock going, okay, let's see. There would be music playing here now. So I'm going to go back to Bill, and he's going to drop some more mad military science. And Bill is a former Army officer and an expert and consultant type from back in the day. He used to do teach asymmetrical warfare. So this isn't some guy who's just like, oh, I read on the internet that this might be. I mean, this is like the guy they would call in to ask questions about this kind of stuff when it happened back then. So go ahead, Bill.
Hey, you're very kind. I did want to mention that one of the reasons Cass Sunstein would not like you, Michael, is because what you're doing basically is you're philosophically terraforming the planet one disobedient individual at a time, and the government doesn't like that.
Well, you know, he created the term libertarian parentalism. Do you know about that?
I do.
It's a horrible co-opting of the term libertarian because there's nothing libertarian about it. For people who don't know, he was Bush's czar of everything, and he's still Obama's czar of everything, although he stepped down, and he's probably going to be the next Supreme Court judge. Did you know they replaced him with a guy who was born in the Soviet Union?
I'm not surprised by that. Madeleine Albright has parentage, of course, from Eastern Europe, and it shows in her prognostications.
Yeah. Well, they replaced him with a guy who, you know, this kind of goes along with what we're talking about, was born in Kiev when it was part of the Soviet Union. So go on with what's happening near Kiev this week.
So what I'm saying is that we have common ground systems that are used, as you pointed out in the segment before, concerning very sophisticated surface-to-air missile systems. Most folks are talking about the Buck, and the Buck came out in 1966. It's had a number of variants that the last one came out in 2004. This has an engagement range of 22 miles. It has an engagement altitude of 72,000 feet. This aircraft was supposedly traveling in a commercial air corridor at approximately 33,000 feet. I say supposedly, allegedly acknowledged, because we don't know what's going on. But it seems to me when you look at the debris spread, which is several miles long, it gives every indication of an engagement of the aircraft by something outside the aircraft, in this case being a missile. And by the way, so your audience knows this, a missile doesn't have to hit an aircraft to destroy it. For instance, American torpedoes and Western torpedoes are designed so they detonate within about 1 to 3 meters of the hull of the ship. So not only the explosive power of the warhead is used, but the explosive power activating the water is used to breach, break, and compromise the hull of a ship. Sort of the same thing happens here, even though, of course, you have less volume when it comes to air than you would to water, so there's less destructive volume. But nonetheless, the same thing is employed. The question we want to ask ourselves is, beyond the technical specifications of the weapon systems as such, is the one that I asked in the earlier segment, which is, who benefits from this? Do the Ukrainians benefit from blaming the Russians for doing this, and do the Russians benefit from blaming the Ukrainians for this? Both parties do. There's speculation in the media that what they were trying to do was target Putin's aircraft in Ukrainian airspace.
Wow. Do you think there's any possibility this was done by some other nation, U.S. or China or anything like that, or North Korea?
You know, it's so interesting that you bring that up, because when you look at the history of World War I, World War II, Korea, Vietnam, all of it, yeah, the Lusitania, Pearl Harbor, the Gulf of Tonkin, all of these things, these are Western and mostly U.S. provocations to get the U.S. and the West into war. So,
and we're gonna have more on this when we come back from the break. We got another 10 seconds here. But yeah, U.S. isn't happy unless it's fighting superpowers. I'm not saying they did this, but yeah, it should be looked at. We'll be back.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. You know, without the Star Trek communicator, we wouldn't have cell phones or computers that fit in your pocket. Because envisioning the future is the first step to real groundbreaking changes in our lifetime. That's why I love Scott Beezer's webcomic, Quantum Vibe. Quantum Vibe has allowed me to more clearly envision LibPair, or Libertarian Paradise, and help me work toward it. Who'll build the roads? You and me. Who'll draw up the blueprints? Scott Beezer in Quantum Vibe at BigHeadPress.com. That's BigHeadPress.com.
Looking for a new home with good neighbors, no income tax, an active shooting culture with excellent Second Amendment protections, a great business climate, and less government? Then Wyoming might just be the place for you. And freedom-minded folks are already there. Founded by author Kenneth Royce, FreeStateWyoming.org encourages free trade, political liberty, and voluntary cooperation. Come bask in the laissez-faire Western culture of the cowboy state. For details, visit FreeStateWyoming.org.
90s when there was a shoot down over the Indian Ocean by the Iranians of an Airbus that belonged to one of the European nations, and they claimed it was a mistake. The Arleigh Burke, I think, was responsible for shooting down a commercial airliner, which is one of the U.S. warships. Finding out who did what to whom, we don't know. The thing to watch out for when everyone is watching the news, and like you were saying, faux news, the collectivist news network, whatever the case may be, they all have their own fixed agendas. I would pay attention to what the BBC is saying, what Al Jazeera is saying, and what the localized news agencies in the area are saying,
but
because
Al Jazeera,
you'll get a more accurate picture.
Al Jazeera, that's one of them terror networks. I heard it on Fox News.
It is interesting. Well, here's what we have to remember about news sources, and this applies to the entirety of our intellectual lives, Michael, is that objectivity is a chimera. It doesn't exist. It never has existed. It can't possibly exist. We are creatures of bias, our own internal bias, and the bias of others who surround us, and everybody has an agenda in their communication. So if you can identify your biases by being frank and truthful about what they are, and you know the biases of what you're listening to, you can come up with the single most accurate picture of what's going on. But if you go to faux news or CNN, assuming they're unbiased, it's a human impossibility. So I think that's silly.
Yeah. So I guess I was just kind of making a joke, as you know, about how a lot of Americans believe what they're told. A lot of people everywhere believe all over the world.
Well, they're trained to do that in the government schools.
Yep. Yep. So go on. Go on with your theories and machinations of theories about the machinations of others.
So I think what's going on here is that if we ask ourselves, cui bono, who benefits? Do the Russians benefit from shooting it down and blaming it on the Ukrainians? Yes. Do the Ukrainians benefit by shooting it down and blaming it on the Russians? Yes. Because the answer is yes to both those questions for a false flag operation on both their parts. We may never arrive at the answer. And there's another reason we may never arrive at the answer, which is that we are dealing with Cyrillic-based cultures, not English-speaking cultures necessarily. Maybe English is a second language. Maybe you wouldn't be surprised. Most news agencies and most intelligence agencies don't use primary source documentation that isn't English-speaking to make assessments of what these countries are going to do. Very rarely will they employ actual Russian speakers or whatever the dialect is that they employ in the Ukraine to look at primary source documentation in the newspapers, the media, what the politicians are talking about, those kind of things. It's always going to be skewed, and it's going to be skewed with a Western perspective.
A lot of times U.S. news like faux news and Fox News and CNN and all of those, I mean, they will take a press release from the Pentagon and make that their source. I mean, I remember there was this one video someone put together about when the Edward Snowden leaks came out, and it was like they showed like 20 news people on, you know, seven different networks in a row all using the phrase like, he has blood on his hands. This guy has blood on his hands. And a couple other like key phrases that were in the Pentagon press release that went out the day before.
That came out of the DOD playbook or the Republican playbook or the Democratic playbook and these kind of memes that you hear. Like you'll hear Rush and Hannity and Savage and some of the others. It's eerie. They'll say the exact same things as if they woke up in the morning, checked the inbox in their email, and they got their instructions
talking points
on what meme to say. Their talking points.
Yeah, they don't get a script. they get what they should say, and they get to, you know, the art of it and the artifice of it and the artfulness of it, which means the lying of it. Like the artful dodger means the crafty, conniving dodger. The artfulness of it is they get to spew eloquently in their own words, in their own timbre, in their own rhythm about what is being told.
Well, and you'll see the same thing, for instance, with working families as a phrase. You know, the Democratic National Committee put that out over a dozen years ago, and you hear that all the time. And we both know, Republicans and Democrats alike, they don't give a flying flip about working families. All they care about is how much they can drain their tax cattle.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we live in Vampire Nation. That's where we are.
Is there another nation you can go to, or is it all Vampire Nation to varying degrees?
You know what? But there is. I mean, this is the best part. You and I have had some great discussions in the past about, does LIBPAR exist right now? And as a matter of fact, it does. It exists in the underground economy. It exists in the black economies. It exists in the dark internet. It
black
exists
market,
in
meaning
Somia.
Black market, not necessarily meaning, black African-American market. You mean black market.
That's correct.
The black economy.
You can even call it the gray market, or Zomia, that 2.5 million square kilometer massif that oversees seven nations in Southeast Asia. That's called a state repellent zone.
Isn't the U.S. Very concerned with putting some state into Zomia, though?
Of course they are. I mean, look at FATCA. You know what they're doing to people who wish to expat if you remain a U.S. citizen. They're trying to make it so that this entire sophisticated IRS tethering apparatus that goes into every orifice we own as human beings goes with us when we go overseas.
Yeah. Wonder if they have IRS-specific spy drones so far.
I'm sure they're under development, Michael.
You know, to see if you leave the U.S. semi-permanently but haven't yet, you know, gotten citizenship in another country, or have and haven't rescinded your U.S., or have done all of that, and, you know, so they can see if you're working at the outdoor bookstore in Prague, so they can tax you on that.
Exactly. And, like all governments and states do, they will spend a disproportionate amount of money to get a little bit of money out of you.
Yep. Yep.
Like the legal system. The legal system's a perfect example.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, I mean, a really interesting example is Ian Freeman did the maths on the collection agents of parking in Keene, New Hampshire, because he and his buddies, or some of his buddies, I don't even know if he does it anymore, but the Robin Hooding, where they put a nickel in the parking meter, walking ahead of the parking enforcement officer to keep people from getting a ticket, and then put a little, a thing that looks like a ticket on their windshield that says, "You've been saved a ticket by," and Ian figured it out, and it's something like, you know, they spend $200,000 a year on parking enforcement and make $203,000 a year on it, or something like, you know, they make like a tiny percent to have this huge apparatus in place to bother people.
And that's what the state does.
And it's even more extreme than that, too, with persecutions. You know, they will spend $1 million to shut someone down who was making $10,000 a year selling weed, you know.
And then that person making $10,000 a year selling weed
or milk
is subsidized
by
the taxpayers,
yeah,
or raw milk, so that they can spend $30,000 to $50,000 a year to keep them in a cage.
That's my problem with that's one of my many problems with Republicans' attitudes about the drug war. A lot of them are very in favor of it, and they're so against, you know, giving anyone food stamps. And I'm against giving anyone food stamps too, but, you know, giving anyone food stamps costs, you know, a few thousand dollars a year. Incarcerating someone for having weeds or raw milk,
Or illegal vegetation
of any kind, you know, it costs, you're paying not just some of their food, you're paying all their food, all their housing, all their medical care, everything, you know, for years. So,
and even from a long-term political standpoint, you have so stymied and retarded their ability to give you more tax dollars once they get out that you've bitten your nose off to spite yourself in the long term too.
Yeah, you're unemployable if you're a drug felon for a nonviolent crime. So
exactly.
How does this pertain to missile shootdowns of commercial airliners? It doesn't.
Well,
maybe it does.
Well, you know, there is one way that it pertains, and that's that whenever you see the administrations paying attention to these kind of incidents and you see the media splashing this all over the news, you have to ask yourself, is this a case of misdirection where they're trying to take people's attention away from domestic policy mischief and put it into the international arena?
Yeah.
And that's not conspiracy, that's fact.
Yep. So tell me more about the shoot down of the missile with the
missile. I recommend that if anybody wants to get smart about this, that they can take a look at the Buk, which is B-U-K, and take a look at that missile technology with which the USSR had, of course, since it started in 64. And it was succeeded by Russia once the USSR became extinct. And it shared it with its Russian Confederation states, of which Ukraine was a member of that. And if they look at that, they'll discover some of the capabilities that are other than shoulder fire to do this kind of thing. And let's remind the listeners once again, too, that the Ukraine was the heartland in which in the 1930s, Robert Conquest wrote about the terror famine and what the Ukrainians refer to as the Holodomor, where I think one out of every five, if not one out of every four human beings who lived in the Ukraine during the 30s perished of starvation as a result of Stalin's policies. So is there a lot of historical animosity that could drive people to do this kind of horrendous thing and shoot down an aircraft so that they could blame the Russians for this? I think the evidence is certainly there for that kind of animus.
Yeah. Crazy world we live in, man. We have a couple minutes. Do you want to touch on what's happening in Palestine?
You know, we can. I think it's disgusting what's happening. I remember seeing there was a flash of the fan.
If anybody is in a cave, what's happening?
What's happening is, as a result of Hamas, according to the Israelis, and of course the Israelis dominate the U.S. media and have an automatic applause crowd within all media outlets in America except for Al Jazeera. What the Israelis did is they claimed that they were so sick of the provocations of Hamas operating from Gaza and the Palestinian state, as it were, an extant state, that they decided to start an air war, a counter-rocket campaign, and now a ground war to go in there and stop Hamas from what it's doing. What you're going to see, though, is the same thing that happened in 2006 with Hezbollah. You're going to see a whole lot of civilian casualties. You're going to see a primary use of tank power and air power on the part of Israelis, which, of course, leads to tremendous collateral damage, a very fancy term that means maiming and killing men, women, and children who are non-combatants. And it's just a mess. And I saw this brief news piece where it said that there were Israelis actually getting in picnic chairs and sharing popcorn while the rockets launched from Israel into Hamas and the ground invasion started, where they were sort of, you know, rah-rahing yet another terrorist campaign.
The freedom fiends.
Shiny badges on your jacket. Shiny badges start a conversation with your neighbor or your doctor or your family or your school. Now there's teachers and lawyers and business executives, and they all wear shiny badges and they all reject the state. Shiny badges on your jacket. Shiny badges show the world that you reject coercion and aggression and oppression by the state. Shinybadges.com.
The Michigan Peace and Liberty Coalition is proud to announce the second annual Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest. It's at the Circle Pines Center just outside Kalamazoo, Friday, August 22nd through Monday, August 25th. There will be family and grown-up friendly activities, great conversation, presentations, and bacon. Lots of bacon. It doesn't matter if you're an OG libertarian, a newbie, or just anarcho-curious. Come on out and enjoy some voluntarism. For more information, go to miplc.org.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Twisting the worm of truth into your brain. This is Michael Dean. I'm talking to Bill Buepert, former Army officer and expert on asymmetrical warfare, about what's going on in the world, in the news this week, in the military-industrial news of the world. So where did you want to go, Bill? Missiles or missiles hitting planes over Kiev, or missiles being launched into Palestine?
Well, Yeah, what we were talking about was what's going on in Israel. And Israel has something called the Iron Dome. And what the Iron Dome is, it's slaved off both the U.S.-provided Patriot missile system and a number of indigenous systems that the Israelis have made with a lot of U.S. money, of course. And they use that to shoot down. They're claiming a 91% success rate in shooting down what are mostly Russian and Soviet artifact missiles that have been employed by Hamas, which they've gotten through Hezbollah and a number of other Arab provisioners throughout the area in the Middle East. So they've got that system in place. But if you look at the Winograd report from 2006 with the Israeli invasion of Lebanon when they were trying to take down Hezbollah, and Hezbollah really gave the IDF a fight of their life, it revealed a whole lot of weaknesses within the IDF structure. I'm looking forward to seeing what the weaknesses are going to be in the IDF structure this time. For instance, in the 2006 campaign, they primarily relied upon air power to do that. Now, what happens when you employ air power against built-up areas, urban areas like this, that have a very large citified population? You're going to get a whole lot of maimed and killed women and children. And the same thing, of course, is happening right now. I think there's a news article I read the other day, and this photo is going to become apocryphal, where there were four boys, probably age 8 to 10 years old, who were killed by some kind of rocket that was launched by the Israelis that landed on a beach. And the tremendous propaganda value for Hamas and the Arab street of men and women carrying the bodies draped in their arms of bloodied and dead children. No matter how successful the Israelis are in this latest push against their Palestinian neighbors, they will not succeed in establishing any kind of moral high ground because it never has been there.
Every time a superpower, and I would call Israel a superpower because they largely control the U.S. military, I believe. Would you say that's true?
I wouldn't say that's true. I would say that they have an influence on it, but I certainly wouldn't say that because, you know what, we go into dangerous conspiratorial fever swamps when we say that the Israelis have control of the U.S. military and vice versa. What I think is there are some common goals.
And I will defer to you in that because I've never been in the military and you've helped run the military, so you know more than I do. And I will say that I think that anytime – any power, any state kills civilians on the other side of some imaginary line that was drawn over T, you know, after World War II or any line, that is the most powerful recruitment tool for the opposition they can imagine.
Amen, Michael.
Yeah.
That's precisely what it does. And
of course,
the U.S. Army inaugurated this during the War of Northern Aggression from 61 to 65.
Yeah. And look how many people signed up. You know, conversely, look how many people signed up, went down to the recruiting station, you know, September 12th, 2001 and signed up. You know, when you kill civilians, you create more fighters against you. And when Israel kills Palestinian citizens, they create more. When the CIA, you know, kills Pakistani citizens or Afghanistan citizens, when they blow up a wedding party to get one guy. You know, I'll say something that I don't think is said very much. I think that. Well, it's said a lot that most wars are unethical, but I think that pretty much the only ethical weapon of war is a rifle. And I say that because you know who you're shooting, you know, and I'm talking a semi-auto rifle, I think, is the only, with a scope, is the only ethical war tool because it's the only one that can accurately target a single known individual.
I agree. And if we married that concept up to the only justifiable conflict is one fought to defend your own soil, I think we could reduce a whole lot of conflict around the planet. But we're going to talk about that, I think, in the next hour when we talk about the Hutus and the Tutsis and the Rwandan genocide.
Yeah. Yeah. So any more on the Israeli situation?
You know, I just think the USS Liberty was almost destroyed as a ship off the Israeli coast in 1967. It was a U.S. surveillance ship, call it a spy ship, whatever the case may be. The Israelis did do that. What is telling is that a Medal of Honor was awarded to the commander of that ship. And please remember that a Medal of Honor is only awarded to people who are combatants against an enemy foe. So I thought it was quite telling for that to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, both sides are claiming self-defense and we're being aggressed on in that Israeli conflict. And it's like the beginning of that was so far back. I don't want to take it to, you know, Abraham had two sons, but it's like, who can even say at this time? But in my mind, the Israelis are bullying the Palestinian people over the actions of a few.
Well, I absolutely think so. 92% of all Israeli soil is owned by the government, and they do that for two reasons. Number one, they're a Marxoid socialist collective, always have been, always will be. But number two, the Saudis and the Arabs have a lot of oil money. If they didn't own all of that land, you can imagine that if the Saudis were really savvy, they'd go in there and they'd buy up all the condos, houses, land, real estate, commercial real estate, whatever the case may be in Israel, and they'd take care of the problem right away, and the Israelis will have none of that.
All right, and we'll be back after this trip to the market for hour two of the Freedom Fiends. Say worms, Bill.
Worms. Annelids.
Annelids. Nematodes. All right. What sets Survival Punk apart from all those other survivalist sites? A rational, creative approach to self-reliance. Applying a punk DIY ethic to survivalism without any of the fear-mongering or tinfoil hattery that pervades the survivalist movement. Survival Punk covers a huge range of topics, along with a healthy bit of myth-busting. Survival Punk provides a ton of dirt-cheap creative solutions to common prepping problems, with an accent on the paleo lifestyle. Check out survivalpunk.com. That's survivalpunk.com. This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. I've been on the World Wide Web since its inception in 1994. I've tried dozens of web providers in that time. The only one that hasn't broken my heart is HostGator. HostGator has unlimited server space, unlimited throughput, and a guaranteed uptime of better than 99.9% for only $150 a year. You can pay a little less elsewhere, but you'll pull out your hair dealing with anyone else. HostGator has great service and unlimited tech support, only a phone call away, 24/7, 365. HostGator is where pros like the Fiends host, because we know how to do it right. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the HostGator affiliate link on the right sidebar to sign up today. Things are working better. This is Mr. Michael Dean with some weird, I've fallen into a wormhole and I can't get up, and I am broadcasting from the 11th dimension. Are you there, Bill Buford, on the Freedom Fiends?
I'm right here from the command bunker that the Freedom Fiends has established in the south, what is referred to as southern Arizona or northern Mexico, depending on your perspective.
We could get into the, we could get into the children coming across the border, but that's, let's talk about the Rwandan genocide, because I wanted to hear you talk about this for weeks. So for some backstory, there was an ethnic slaughter in our lifetimes in 1994 for about 100 days, and it was neighbor against neighbor, you know, not even people that necessarily had guns. Some of them just had machetes. And there was in the country of Rwanda in Africa, and there were, talk about hate speech, there were talk radio shows or radio shows that would play music, and then the guys would talk between the songs for 10 minutes and basically say, you know, go kill your neighbors, they are cockroaches. And this was based on an ethnic difference that was so minuscule that the people doing the killing had to check the national IDs. Another reason you shouldn't want national IDs or any database that everyone has to have.
Call them Enyensi, which is cockroaches.
Yeah, and between a 500,000 and 1,000,000 people were killed. And most Americans have never heard of this. And it has a lot. We should study it because, A, if you have any kind of compassion and heart, you should care that 1,000,000 people were murdered by their neighbors. And B, this is about the strongest case I've ever heard for citizen ownership of rifles. Because this is a thing where people came in and slaughtered, you know, factories full of people, neighborhoods full of people, schools and hotels full of people, where one guy with a gun could have staved it off and saved hundreds of lives at a time. So go ahead, Bill.
You know, this was even a genocide by the UN definition of genocide, which is 10% of a given population going under the sword, such as what the Australians did in to the Aboriginals,
It also was a UN genocide because the UN stood by, armed, and let it happen for the most part.
You know, I don't know. People watch the popularized film, which I like, Hotel Rwanda, but a lot of artistic license was taken in that film. Okay. And they tried to make it out as if the United Nations was a hero. And the reason why the United Nations did what it did is not only are they weak, but they are so slavish to a bureaucratic hierarchy that can't adapt in time, especially as events start to transpire and get really dynamic and move. They can't help but be stuck in the middle of the road to get run over, if that's what the case is.
To where, like, you know, you've got – if you've got 10 UN peacekeepers standing there with rifles and sidearms, they are there as observers, which means they have to simply observe when people are being murdered.
And, you know, it's not as if the UN doesn't participate actively in murder itself. I would urge your audience to start page search UN atrocities and take a look at what they come up with, because there's a whole host of things. For instance, when African-led UN contingents, whether in Africa or elsewhere, have actually committed atrocities, you know, in the name of the UN, not because the UN directed them to do so, but because they lost control of the soldiers that they had sent to a specific country. To set the stage for what happened here, we have to remember that what happened, this is all about history. This is all about drawing lines where lines have no business being drawn, and this is all about colonial extrapolation of second and third order effects that no one takes into account, especially the Western colonialist. From 1884 until the end of World War I, this part of Africa was essentially a colonial stronghold, an embryonic stronghold to include Tanzania, of the Germans. Of course, after World War I, when the Germans lost the war, a caretakership was given over to Belgium.
Belgium's relationship to the UN? Is that the headquarters of the UN?
No, Brussels is the headquarters of the EU. And the headquarters of the UN itself, of course, is in New York City.
Well, because there's a line in Boston's Gun Bible, and this is before the EU existed. He talked about, you know, if any blue-headed dragoons ever, meaning UN soldiers, if any blue-headed dragoons ever try to come to America and take my guns, I may die, but I'm going to send a few blue helmets back to Belgium in a box. Was he just picking Belgium randomly as a?
I think he was. That's very curious to me because, you know, Boss and I are friends, and we're also real big fans of a Belgian-produced rifle called the FNFAL, is the Fabrique Nationale. Fusilier Automatique Léger.
The right arm of the free world, which is called that because it's the main battle rifle of every non-communist country except America. America uses those little poodle shooters, the AR platform.
But I would tell you, since that time, I've gone from the FNFAL as my primary BR to the AR platform, because I think the AR platform is superior in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I have a one-man band of Liberty music that I put out a CD of called Right Arm of Wyoming, which is named after the right arm of the free world rifle, because I had a FAL at the time. But, you know, the FAL is a little too much gun for me. I'm 5'5", and that's made for taller people, I think.
It's a lot of gun. As a matter of fact, when the South Africans adopted it as the R1, they added an inch to the stock length.
Yeah, those guys, because some of those guys are, you know, 6'6", or a lot of them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, of course, we saw some of the UN forces in Rwanda carrying FNFALs in 94, because I think that's what the Belgians deployed with while they were there. And the Belgians were a primary part of the force, because the Belgians had been, by 1994, had been in the country for almost 70 years.
That's the rifle that the Brits used to shoot unarmed civilians on Bloody Sunday.
Indeed, in 1971.
Ireland. Yep.
And I'm so glad that you remember that.
Okay, and here we are at our top 10 genocide countdown. number two in the 20th century after World War II, Nazis. We have the Rwandan genocide, the number two on our countdown of genocide. So tell us more, Bill.
I don't know whether it is number two as far as body count is concerned, because R.J. Rummel out of the University of Hawaii does something called democide He does that stack up of,
how about
the corpse piles.
How about if this was a band and this was a countdown? This would be the most underrated band you've never heard and should.
I'll go with that.
Yeah.
I think that's great. I do recommend that everybody in your audience watch Hotel Rwanda. And also...
You told me to watch it. I watched it. It's a really well-made movie. Don Cheadle plays this hoteler, Belgian-employed hoteler in Rwanda who saved a bunch of lives. There's a lot of parallels between the true story that guy's based on and Schindler. You know, they made the Schindler's List
there
movie
is.
On.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, he was a Hutu, which were the people that were doing the killings, and he was saving Hutu and Tutsi, which were the people being killed, the Tutsi. So, yeah.
And of course, by the end of the movie, he gets to the RPF, which is the army that the Tutsi had developed.
The
rebels to defend themselves
the citizens
from.
Citizens with rifles.
The Hutu. Yeah, citizens with rifles. I'd also recommend Lieutenant General Romé Antonius Dallaire's Shaking Hands with the Devil.
I watched Hotel Rwanda at your recommendation, and afterwards I felt raped. And it is – the movie probably downplays what actually happened. I mean, it's a movie. You can sit and eat popcorn and watch it, and it's nothing like being there. And they don't show a lot of graphic violence in it. But it gives you a good taste of what happened in our lifetimes that most people don't know about. And afterwards, I said I needed a unicorn chaser. And you said, what's that? And I said, it's after you see something horrific, it's something fun and light, you know, either a picture or a song or another movie. And you recommended the movie This Is 40, a Judd Apatow film.
I did.
Which I had to order on DVD. So by the time it got to me, you know, I didn't really need the unicorn chaser in. I didn't love that movie, which is odd because I love Judd Apatow. I love the movie... the Dewey Cox story, Walk Hard. Have you seen that?
I have.
And I really liked The 40-Year-Old Virgin. But, yeah, there was too much yelling for me. I don't have kids, and, you know, my wife and I never yell at each other. So it wasn't good humor to me. It wasn't fun. There were some fun moments in it, though.
There were some fun moments in it. But getting back to Rwanda, and of course, I gave that to you. It was sort of like brain bleach. To watch that after.
If I watched it immediately after, but you know, Netflix doesn't have everything digitized yet. So I had Hotel Rwanda, you can watch streaming on Netflix. And This Is 40, you have to order on DVD. So there you go. I would recommend here, I'm going to interject even more. I have a recommendation for a really fun unicorn chaser that's available for streaming. There's a comic named Jim Jefferies, Jefferies. He's Australian. There's a streaming stand-up of him on Netflix, and he has a two-season show called Legit, which is funny as heck. So there's a unicorn chaser for anyone that's available on Netflix immediately after watching Hotel Rwanda. So back to the not fun stuff. Go ahead, Bill.
And it's not fun at all, but it does provide a great set piece for why these Western derived lines on the map, which are just they're done almost at random, but they stick to these 90 degree angular fixtures and things like that, or they go around major terrain features without taking clan, blood, familial hatred, any kind of nonsense where clans don't like each other, native populations don't get along, parts of those indigenous populations. And then when the West in the colonial area and the post-colonial area insists that they remain together and that they govern together, it's just an evil mixture and brew for the kind of stuff that happened in Rwanda. No one can take away from the Rwandans, both the Hutus and the Tutsis, their own culpability in developing this. But I'm here to tell you that the West did everything it possibly can, as it usually does, to make the circumstances that led to this genocide come at the perfect time in a perfect storm. It set all the conditions for this horrific thing to happen. So I'm not excusing the Hutus and the Tutsis for doing to each other what they did, especially the Hutus in this case, where there are body counts as high as a million. But the West was culpable in this in a big way, as they are in so much stuff, because they don't know when to non-interfere. It's sort of like Star Trek. Star Trek is a fascist federation flitting about the universe, violating the Prime Directive every episode. And the Prime Directive in Star Trek is they say, you don't screw with indigenous cultures. But what did they do every episode? They screwed with indigenous cultures. And that's, of course, what we have here. You know, the Star Trek was the UN in space.
I've often thought that, which is why I like Firefly better.
Me too.
We'll be back. Oh, it's so nice to hear that music again. We got things fixed, by the way. I've mentioned
that.
But I'm going to say it again to our audience because I'm happy.
Woo!
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Are you a political activist who does things that the government might not like? Then this free ebook may save your life. Rats is your guide to protecting yourself against snitches, informers, informants, agents provocateur, narcs, finks, and similar vermin. Rats was written by OG libertarian Claire Wolfe. Rats is a short book, easy to read, and available free in many formats. Download Rats free at rats-nosnitch.com. That's rats-nosnitch.com.
Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
Yes, this is the Freedom Fiends. And yes, I did hear all the karaoke at Porkfest from a distance. I was actually watching it from over by the porta potties for most of it. I heard most of it. And karaoke is not my thing. I'll do it, but I don't like to wait an hour and a half to hear a lot of bad singing, man. Even though some of it, even some of the bad singing in karaoke can be really good. But was loud. It was drunken. I'm not drunken and I'm not loud. So I like to be loud in my windowless bunker and people can turn it off if they want. That's my kind of media. I was talking a little bit during the break about the difference in the Freedom Fiends production than most talk radio. And I'm not criticizing most talk radio. I'm just pointing out what's different about us. Most talk radio, the ads and the, you know, the program material, the person speaking, the people speaking, most of it kind of feels and sounds like this. You're all going to die unless you buy my product and or philosophy. And the Freedom Fiends program material, you know, us talking and the ads that I produce are more like, hey, you might enjoy buying this product and service or philosophy or life plan that's free. So yeah, that's what we do. And I want to do a shout out here before we go back to the Rwandan genocide. I want to drop in a little bit of Unicorn Chaser in here because the genocide is a horrific statism. Things governments do. It is a horrific topic and it's hard to talk about. So I want to recommend a documentary called, it's on Netflix for streaming. It's called Radio Unnameable, and it's named after and about a show called Radio Unnameable that was on a Pacifica Group radio station in New York City from like 1965 till about 1976. And the main guy was a guy named Bob Fass, who was pretty interesting of a cat. He played music, but it was kind of like a talk show with music. He'd play music, but talk, you know, wouldn't just say, and that was this by Bob Dylan. And now you're going to hear, you know, he would talk for, you know, a few minutes between each thing. And he would actually, he kind of helped invent free form radio. You know, a lot of people attribute it to stuff in the late 60s that happened in LA and San Francisco. But Bob Fass, man, check this out. And, you know, he interviewed and had like Bob Dylan play in studio before Bob Dylan was famous. He regularly had Abbie Hoffman on as an on-air guest. You know, he had Jerry Jeff Walker come in and play music on there. He had Donovan come in and play music on there. Real cutting edge guy, like putting people on before they were famous and, you know, interviewed people like the Weather Underground and the Yippies. And, here's the thing I'll say, like, you know, the guy and the Pacifica Network stations are all communism all the time. They're all socialist, leftist, far left. But the interesting thing is, I think a lot of people like that back then were like that because there weren't options. You know, they couldn't stand on the shoulders of giants like, you know, I stood on the shoulder of Stefan Molyneux and people like that and Free Talk Live. And so in the 60s, if you were anti-war, anti-censorship, pro-free speech, you know, all the bad things that were going on with the government then, it made sense to be a leftist because that was the only template available for you. There was not anarcho-capitalism media readily available. There was not voluntarist. There was not libertarian media readily available. And if you did manage to run into the libertarians in the 70s, you know, they were trying to vote themselves power to get rid of power, which doesn't make sense. So I really think that there's a lot of people who I kind of forgive for being inveterate leftists, and they, you know, Bob Fass is still doing radio today, and he still is, but you know, he didn't have the template back then, and it was set in stone by growing up in the 60s and, you know, dealing with people like Richard Nixon and LBJ. And LBJ was a Democrat, but he certainly wasn't that kind of leftist that those people were. So I forgive you, Bob Fass, for being an inveterate all communism all the time radio host, and I liked your radio, and people should go check out, if you can put on your suspension of leftism hat, go watch Radio Unnameable, the documentary on Netflix. So, Bill, going back to, for a couple minutes here after my rant, before we go to the break, back to the Rwandan genocide. How does this genocide compare to other genocides in our top 10 countdown?
What's interesting is that when you look at this in compressed time, it's probably one of the most lethal genocides, with 500,000 to a million folks being slaughtered
100 days,
within a short period of time. It is. It's 100 days in 94 to 94. For instance, when we look at the estimates of up to 3 million Germans who were killed after the expulsion of Germans after World War II and Operation Keelhaul and things like that, that happened from 1945 to 1950. When we look at Kampuchea under Pol Pot, they say 1 million to 3 million, but that happened for 4 years, from 75 to 79. And by the way, those interested, since we've all been lied to in all the government indoctrination that we've suffered through in books on that, I recommend The Savage Continent and After the Reich.
Thank you. I like when you recommend things. It's an education chaser after my just fun chaser movies that I recommend. And they are movies. We'll be back.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Hey, this is Squisklar Squiggles from Death Clocks, and you are listening to the Freedom Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now, so there you go.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get State Speech is Hate Speech, Guns and Weed, Buy Sheep for Sheep on Sheep, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists.
It's only $5
for 10 buttons, including shipping. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Yeah, we're back on the Freedom Fiends, Freeform Radio. Good morning or good afternoon, depending on what time zone you're in. Good morning. Let's say good afternoon. Good afternoon, unindicted co-conspirators. You know, that guy Bob Foss started every show with "Good morning, Cabal," and he was on in the middle of the night. Cabal, meaning a group, a sinister underground group. And I'm going to say greetings, unindicted co-conspirators, because we'll probably all be that eventually in some camp. Maybe. Unless you just, if you don't love America, get out and move to Somalia. People say that like Somalia would be better, or as if Somalia doesn't have a government, or as if there is, you know, any nation state or thing with a name in the world that doesn't have much government. And the thing is, Rwanda is one country over, you know, there's one country between it and Somalia. It's practically Somalia. If you don't love America, if you don't love government telling you what to do, move to Rwanda and have your neighbors cut your head off. So, you know, how is the West culpable? How is the West and just states in general culpable in the Rwandan genocide, where a million people were killed by their neighbors, largely with machetes?
Well, I think what it speaks the most to, Michael, is that when the West goes in the during colonial times and post-colonial times, and they put in these very angular, geometrically perfect map lines, regardless of clan, blood, culture, blood feuds that go back generations, if not hundreds of years. And then they say, they point their finger at them or maybe poke them in the chest and say, you two or three or four or five clans are going to get along whether you like it or not. And if you don't, we're going to put a bullet in your head or we'll threaten you with some form of Western violence if you don't get along. That doesn't work. And that's what's caused so much of the strife in the Middle East. It's what's caused so much of the strife in Africa proper. You know, Africa, second largest continent on the planet, a population nearing a billion, second only to Asia. There's a lot of different substructures and substrata geographically, geopolitically, and culturally of people. And some people simply don't want to get along, and they should be in other nation states and things like that.
If America wants – if someone listening in America doesn't understand this or doesn't see why they can care, think about situations where your government in America has forced you to interact with people you don't want to interact with. I mean, and I'm not necessarily talking about, like, you know, racial busing or anything, although there is that. And there's all sorts of, you know, you're going to allow these people to be in your club, you know, and I'm not even talking about racial necessarily, just like America loves to force equality by making everybody equally, you know, crippled. The government, all governments break your leg and then give you a crutch. That's what they've done historically forever. And,
ask you to go on the dole.
Yeah. They cripple you and ask you to go on the dole. I mean, I could.
Well, you know, you mentioned Somalia, Michael. It's so interesting because I hear that all the time from the usual suspects where they'll say, well, you should just get out of America and move to Somalia.
They teach it in public school. That's why it's parroted so much.
Of course. And you know, the impotence or why Somalia is the mess it is, it's the symptom of larger forces. I mean, among those forces are the ethnic and tribal violence that's destroyed any stabilizing institutions, whether private or government, the legacy of the British and Italian colonialism that was there. This country, Somalia, is not accustomed to self-governance because since they have colonial artifacts still existing after 150 years, their self-governance was bred out of them quite literally and institutionalized out of them, much like happens in the West, especially in the U.S., as you just alluded to. You know, the long-term effects of central planning, they simply don't go away quickly. We look at Russia, which apparently liberated itself from being the USSR 89 and 91, and they still suffer from so many of the central planning pathologies and things came with the Soviet structure.
And they voted Putin in, who is basically a Soviet-style leader after having some less Soviet-style leaders for a couple decades. Yeah.
And, you know, the only difference between Putin and Obama, not in leadership styles, who they are, anything like that, the only difference between them is that Obama simply doesn't have the levers of violence that Putin does now, but Obama is progressing towards those levers of institutionalized violence at a very rapid pace. And by the way, for those in your audience who think I'm picking on Obama, I'm not. This is Bush's fourth term. I think that everyone who has occupied the awful office is equally culpable and creating one of the worst institutions that's ever probably diseased the North American continent.
Yeah. I mean, if you want another example in America of being forced to hang out with people you don't want to hang out with, which is what we're talking about in colonialism. I mean, think about modern examples like, you know, having your grandmother's genitals felt by a TSA agent who is hired off a pizza box and would not be employable in the free market in any kind of position of authority or expertise. You know, that's you being forced to interact with someone you don't want to interact with. And you want to extrapolate that up. in a post-colonial environment. We had a caller from Cameroon who called in recently, who listens on satellite radio, on a satellite radio receiver. I don't know if you know about this, Bill. We are being listened to in Africa now. It's pretty cool.
Awesome.
And LRN is being listened to there. And he called into Free Talk Live also, and he's talked about how he had just taken a journey the day before of, or a couple days before, of 120 kilometers, which is, you know, probably about 100 miles. He was stopped by police and military and had his car searched and his person searched 21 times in a 100 mile journey. I mean, that's the TSA here extrapolated out to where it's probably headed in a few generations.
And I'm certain that U.S. authorities would look on that with awe, wonderment, and envy. You know, that in 72 miles of travel, he's inspected 21 times.
And they
probably think, well, that's the way it should be.
And they probably will say, and if you want to avoid that inconvenience, just put these cameras and microphones in your car and we'll pay for them. And a lot of people will do it.
I'm surprised with TSA of late that I'm certain that I'm on some kind of list with them because of what's happened with Davy Barker and the mischief I've gotten into with them in the past. But I've been pre-checked when I went to Porkfest. I was amazed.
My wife was too. I was not. She was, but she she didn't accept it because she didn't want to be away. You know, she didn't want to leave me to stand in a line while she jumped through it.
Sure.
Yeah. It was. So go on with your Rwandan expertise.
So I don't think I have expertise because I'm simply an historical observer, and I like to try to connect the dots, and I like to find out what the causes are, because what's important about history is that not only does history rhyme, but it's not simply about dates. History is about what causes those things to happen. And in this case, what caused the Hutus to go after the Tutsi in the fashion that they did? And I do, as I mentioned earlier, put a lot of the culpability on these map lines, a lot of it on Western colonialism. And I don't look at Western colonialism in the same kind of fashion that most of the usual suspects on the left or the collectivists look at that and say it's a bad thing. Because I think that one can say that in India, for instance, they've made good use as one can, of a colonial legacy from the British, more so than if it had been someone else. For instance, you'll find that in former U.S. colonies and former French colonies, the governing pathologies there make things far worse for people. But then again, there's also hoplophobic tendencies in former British colonies. You can't find a former Commonwealth nation in the world, let's say Belize in Central America or South Africa, where they don't have an almost hoplophobic or an
that means fear of guns,
an allergic reaction to guns and weapons. Where that you find in those countries. And of course you find that in other former colonial countries because the guns simply weren't there.
It's really bizarre to me that the American left, especially the extreme American left that are almost bordering on communism, like the Occupy Wall Street movement, it amazes me that those people are anti-gun for private citizens, because it doesn't make sense, because they're anti-concentrating the power in 1% who get it unfairly, which I agree too. You know, I'm not against capitalism like they are, but I'm definitely against corporatism, you know, where the government grants their friends, you know, these special rights to basically print money and not have debt and not face prison when they do something wrong. But the American left is basically, by being anti-gun, saying they want the only guns in the hands of the minions of the 1%. It doesn't make sense, man.
I agree 100%. And if you look at the Rwandan lens through a leftist perspective, you got to think that they'll poo-poo and they'll say, well, that's horrible. But the left embraces those institutions that the Hutus and the Tutsis used to put guns in their own hands but rob other people of their weapons.
Oh, the left are as pro-murder, as pro-government murder as, you know, the worst of the neocons who want to bomb the Middle East, except Israel back to the Stone Age.
Well, World War One, World War Two, Korea, Vietnam, Bosnia, Haiti.
Oh, the war on drugs in our own country.
All under Democrat administration.
The war on drugs in America. You know, I hear neocons all the time saying, you know, drug dealers should be murdered, should be just shot, no trial. I've heard that a lot. And, you know, the thing, though, about the historical precedent that we're not talking about with the Rwandan genocide is that Belgium put the Tutsi in power. Belgium made the Tutsi the enforcers and the government. And then when the Belgian left, you know, it kind of switched over to where the Hutu were in power. You know, basically, these different, and the Hutu was like, okay, we're going to murder them now because they were in power. They were put in power for a while. And I think you're going to see this with the collapsing and the balkanization of America at some point, whether it's official or whether it's, justice in a dark alley. I think you're going to see a lot more Nuremberg trials for the enforcers, for the drug warriors and the goons of the state. And I'm not saying it's a good thing, but I'm saying it's probably going to happen at some point where, you know,
I actually hope that there's a Mandela style reconciliation that occurs where we don't take the lower hand, as it were, and put those people in a position where they're lynched or jailed.
Well,
or
Mandela like that, was kind of,
I think it starts a cycle of violence.
Mandela was kind of backing some of that on the side, wasn't he? Wasn't he backing the necklace thing?
I think that he was. And it's interesting what you were saying about the Tutsi being in charge of the Hutu as a minority by population, because when you look at the Sunni minority ruling over the Shia majority in Iraq, you have all the recipes for exactly what's happening now. Once again, there should be 6 billion nation states, not 215.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I just don't get why people are so easily brainwashed to believe that they need some sort of leader, you know, that 51% picking 49%. Makes it ethical. There's a meme going around that nails it. It's a picture of Socrates being killed by the Roman senators, and it says, or the Greek senators, and it says, Greeks invent democracy, vote to kill Socrates. You know?
I love that. Not that, but government is a death cult, so of course it's going to do that.
Yeah. We'll be back with more on the Freedom Fiends after this trip to the free and mellow market.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
This is the Central Scrutinizer.
I steal your labor by force through taxation.
My job is to spy on you and keep you from hearing things like the Freedom Fiends. I especially do not want you to
torrent Freedom Fiends episodes to keep them drone-proof. Do not go to freedomfiends.com and click on the torrent link and learn how to
torrent Fiends archives.
Do not go to freedomfiends.com
and click on the torrent
link and learn how to torrent Fiends archives. Do not go to
freedomfiends.com and click on the torrent link
and learn how to torrent Fiends archives.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty Projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many Liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
Broadcasting from, you know what kind of bunker it is. And we got Bill Buford here. He is going to give us some redemption in the third act concerning the horrible things that governments do and people do, and people do generally with the help of governments around the world throughout history and perpetuity so far. Go ahead, Bill.
I just want to tell you, I really dig the cats channeling Tom Waits that you had just like 30 seconds ago. That's just bloody awesome.
Yeah.
Cats are natural born anarchists.
They are. There's no cat drug sniffing. There's no drug sniffing cats for the police. Cats wouldn't
would
do
put
it.
Up with it.
They wouldn't
do it.
They would they'd go into the drug house and they'd go, oh, there's some food over here. I'm going to eat it and take a nap. Yep.
Cats would also, they're not collaborators. It's not in their bloodstream to do that.
Yep.
So redemption third act comes to this. Buport's Law of Military Topography would tell you that a rifle culture full of riflemen in mountainous terrain cannot be militarily defeated if they maintain their skills on a consistent basis across the entire population.
Wyoming's a mountainous terrain.
Indeed it is. Wyoming, so is Chechnya, so is Afghanistan, Zomia.
Wyoming looks a lot like Afghanistan in some pictures of Afghanistan. I've seen pictures of U.S. soldiers, like the pictures they send for their buddies and post on Facebook. And I see the picture and I'm like, oh, that guy's standing in Wyoming in his battle dress.
And it could be Western Montana, too.
And I find out it's Afghanistan. So go on.
Yeah. Well, what we see here, if we're trying to link this up and look at Rwanda, the genocide, we look at Gaza and the genocidal tendencies of Israel when it comes to their Palestinian brethren. Because remember that the word Semite means both Jew and Arab. So to be anti-Semitic, I guess, is to...
I can't tell them apart, and people could say I'm racist, but if you take away the, you know, if you have people in contemporary dress, I can't tell a lot of Jews from Arabs from Persians. And, you know, I mean, the differences are as subtle visually as the Hutu and the Tutsi probably are.
Well, indeed, and you can have red-haired, blue-eyed Muslims around the world, whether in Bosnia, northern Afghanistan, or northern India. They're everywhere. You even have them in China in the Western reaches. So, and then we look at the Ukraine and we look at what's happened there. What does this all come down to? What is the common thread? The common thread is the state. The common thread is government. Because as I've gotten this meme of late in the last fortnight where people have been saying, Bill, conservatism, if it wasn't for war, conservatism wouldn't exist. And when you think about that, and when you truly grok it, the left digs war. I get that. Conservatism digs war. Pat Buchanan's isolationist, anti-imperialist tendencies are pretty strong, but he represents a very minority position among
the paleo-conservatives. He's anti-war on drugs now, which is mind-blowing because in the 70s and 80s, I thought of him as like the king of the squares, you know? But he's kind of a true conservative in that he doesn't want to spend money on the war on drugs or the wars overseas.
He's a true paleo conservative, but it's the neoconservatives and the mainstream conservatives, whether they hail from evangelical and fundamentalist churches in America or they're talking on Fox News or they watch Fox News. Those are the folks for whom war is their lifeblood. I mean, for them, they're all about conflict. How many times have you heard the usual people either in your audience or you've been at a bar or something who say, well, we need to nuke that place. Well, why do you need to nuke it? Well, because they said something wrong or they threatened us.
Or Fox News told me they said something wrong. Yeah,
exactly. So we've got to nuke that, which means that we've got to line up mile-long lines of women and children and just go up to them with a pistol and shoot them in the head. It'd be cheaper than a nuclear detonation, but that's basically what they're asking to do. And that's why
evil.
The linkage between these three – it is. It's evil. The linkage between these three apparently disparate elements is the state and government. And government is a death cult.
Yeah.
Because we, Michael, are pro-life as libertarians, anarchists, and abolitionists. Because we believe in peace on earth, quite literally, domestically, and foreign policy. And we also believe that we should always defer to life. Always.
Do you think in 100 years, things will be better or worse for the average citizen on Earth?
It's hard to say, but Wilberforce at the end of the 18th century was saying, slavery's wrong. People laughed at him. Look at us today.
There you go. And now we're saying the state's wrong, and a lot of people are laughing at us. But if you really believe in small government, take it to the smallest. Take it to the single man.
To self-government.
Worms.
Which is the only honest government.
It's been great having you on, Bill. And annelids, worms. Yep. And despite all the technical trouble, we got through it. And we made
good radio.
I appreciate it, Bill. And you'll be on tomorrow, Sunday night, on The Fiends
with Derek J.
At midnight Central Time. You can listen on GCN feed, on LRN feed, or on three radio stations now. We're on two in Wyoming and one in Illinois and Kentucky.
Smash the state.
Worms.
For health,